This morning, as we begin our new year, what I want to ask is this: what time is it for you? What season of life are you in? So if you had to name the season of life that you were in, what would you sort of call it? Or if you had to sum up the moment of time you find yourself in, how would you describe it? A new year. Happy New Year's. We've welcomed 2017, yes, I think we're all feeling good about that, hopefully. And we paused sort of a week ago to usher in the new year, and we sort of counted this passage of time. But this morning, the kind of time that I'm interested in is not so much sort of counting days or years, but what time it is for each of us, what season it is for us. Because I think what I've become convinced of is this: timing really is everything. I was trying over the summer to put together some connections, some intersection points between matters of faith and the world of marketing. And this year, of course, is our year of being under the influence at Nexus. And so I did a lot of reading and studying in the marketing world. And one of the most important things I learned about marketers was this: timing for them is everything. And when companies try to sell us products, when they try to sell them to us is oftentimes just as important as what they're trying to sell or how they're trying to sell it. Timing is everything, because when you understand time, a moment, a season of life, it can change the way you live, and as it turns out, it can change what you buy. Consider Campbell's Soup. I was fascinated to learn this. A while back, Campbell's Soup began monitoring weather patterns as part of their marketing efforts. From their research, what they wanted to create was something they called a misery index. Because they learned this: when people feel miserable, they turn to comfort foods like soup. And so whenever the weather turned cold or wet or snowy, like right now, causing the misery index for people to rise, they would spend more money and ramp up their marketing of chicken noodle soup. In fact, their marketing scheme worked so well and increased sales so well that they then added on something called the flu tracking system. And they would keep a look across the country, and whenever the flu hit a particular area very hard, they would ramp up again their marketing for their soup. And sales for Campbell's, because of this, spiked, because it's not just what you do as a marketer that influences buyers, it's when you do it. Timing is everything. Or consider Dr. Scholl's. Dr. Scholl sells inserts, shoe inserts. They're designed to make your feet more comfortable. And Dr. Scholl's was trying to find the perfect time to market their product. And so what they did is they placed posters advertising their shoe inserts inside women's washrooms at dance clubs. And when I first heard about this, I didn't quite make the connection, but Dr. Scholl's knew something that I didn't. See, Dr. Scholl's knew that women wear very uncomfortable high heel shoes when they go nightclubbing. That I did know. But the research told them this: that when women go to the bathroom at nightclubs, they're not actually going there most of the time to use the washroom. They're going there to take off their high heels so they can rest their aching feet. And so Dr. Scholl's thought, what if we put an advertisement perfectly timed right in women's restrooms in nightclubs to women who are resting their feet? Sales for Dr. Scholl's, after they did this, it jumped, it skyrocketed, because the ad came to women, they encountered the message right when they were most receptive to it. Because timing is everything. Or consider Hellmann's mayonnaise. There's a classic question for me about Hellmann's mayonnaise. I think we all love mayo, but the question is, does mayonnaise go with French fries? What do you think? Yes. Oh, of course it does. Anyone say no? Oh, fascinating. Interesting. All right, I'm a big mayo and fry guy. What's that?
That's actually an aioli, not just mayonnaise.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I'll take it any day, just dipping mayonnaise, fries. Oh, it's delicious. Probably the worst thing for you. But Hellmann's had a problem, though. Hellmann's problem was this: everyone sort of considers mayonnaise something that goes with lunch on a sandwich. And so they wanted, of course, to expand their market. So they did something that's absolutely fascinating to me. They partnered with a supermarket chain in Brazil. And what they had done was this: anytime a customer purchased Hellmann's, an algorithm at the store put together recipes based on Hellman's mayo and the contents of your grocery cart and printed them out on the back of your receipt. Absolutely crazy. I mean, think about how perfectly timed that is. At the very moment people are thinking about food and meals and recipes, Hellman works it so that the back of your recipe, there's a list of recipes. All of them include Hellman's and the ingredients in your cart. Part of me is thinking, I wish they would do that here. That would be perfect. Cooking instructions to go along with it. Hellman's found the perfect time to advertise to customers. Their sales increased by 44%. Because timing is everything. One final story of how far companies go and how it sometimes backfires a little on them. This is a true story. An angry man walks into a Target store just outside of Minneapolis. He insists on speaking to the manager, and he's irate because he accuses the manager at Target of trying to encourage his 16-year-old daughter to become pregnant because she's been receiving pregnancy-related coupons from Target. The manager has no idea what's going on, but he calls the upset man a number of days later to follow up with him to apologize again. The father's no longer angry. In fact, he's quite subdued because he's talked to his daughter, and it turns out that she is actually pregnant. Somehow, Target knew she was pregnant before her family did. How so? This is a little creepy. Target realized new parents are like the Holy Grail to advertise to, because think about it, new parents are overwhelmed, they're exhausted, they're in the middle of huge changes, and so their shopping patterns are in flux. And so what Target wanted to know, is there any way they could get to new parents before any other company did? So they employed a team of people to analyze the shopping habits of pregnant women using predictive behavior analytics. And what they found is that pregnant women tend to start buying things like unscented lotions, supplements like calcium, magnesium, zinc, cotton balls, washcloths. Target identified 25 things that pregnant women are likely to buy and gave women a pregnancy prediction score. And so if you started buying these, they would then send you ads related to diapers, pregnancy-related coupons. When the story of the 16-year-old girl broke in the New York Times, Target had tens of thousands of women in their database they had identified as probably pregnant and who they were sending coupons to. What Target knew was this: it's not just what you advertise to people, it's when. And if you can advertise pregnancy-related products to pregnant women, you've hit a gold mine. You might wonder what the follow-up was, though, right? When this story broke, as you can imagine, a lot of people are like, what the heck? We're not very happy about this. And so they've scaled back. Charles Turig, he was the author of the report, he said, Target is now more subtle. What they will do is they will send pregnant women advertisements and coupons for frying pans, towels, and diapers so that it doesn't look like they're being directly targeted. You see, for marketers, timing their ads well is a way for them to bring us under their influence. And it's incredibly manipulating and disturbing. But the success of well-timed marketing campaigns points to an important lesson for us all. Timing is so important in life. And if companies believe it's worth spending millions of dollars trying to advertise to you at the right time, the perfect moment, a precise season, it probably makes sense for us to consider what time it is for us, what season we're in. If timing really is everything, then the question is, what time is it for you? What is this particular season of your life asking of you? You know, one of the things that impresses me most about Jesus was his sense of timing. He had a keen sense of seasons, what time it was for him in life and what it was calling for. And so you would catch him saying things like, now is not the right moment. My time has not yet come. Or alternatively, now is the time. The hour is upon us. The time is coming. So Jesus seems very tuned into a sense of time that went beyond what hour it was, what day it was. He's able to sense and appreciate when the time was right for something and when it was off. And I think it's a skill that we don't talk about or think about often enough. And I've come to think this, part of being healthy and alive is understanding our seasons of life. Understanding the time we are in and what that calls from us, what that means for us. So again, we begin this new year. I want to ask that question of each of us. What time is it for you? This week, this month, however long it takes you to sort of figure out, what time is it for you? What is this season asking you to take on or leave behind? What is this season telling you you're ready for or what you need to give up? In this specific season of your life, what do you need to embrace? What is God or life or time asking of you in this moment, in this season? The trouble I find with seasons is that to fully embrace a new season of life means sometimes letting go and leaving behind another season. And I find this tremendously difficult because to embrace what is next or before us often means letting go of what was before. Consider this story, one of my favorites in scripture from John chapter 20. It's Jesus' resurrection scene, and he's about to encounter Mary, the first person to see him alive. This is how the story unfolds. Now, Mary stood outside the tomb crying, and as she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. They asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" "They've taken my Lord away," she said, "and I don't know where they've put him." At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize that it was Jesus. He asked her, "Woman, why are you crying? Who is it you're looking for?" Thinking he was the gardener, she said, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have put him and I will get him." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned toward him and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said, "Do not hold on to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father." I love this scene. It's gorgeous, but it ends so oddly. This beautiful reunion scene is marred by Jesus' confusing remarks about Mary not holding on to him. I mean, it kind of feels like you want to say to Jesus, like, "Chill out, she just wants to give you a hug. What's the big deal with that?" I've come to think in the world of proof texting, I might use this as a case against social hugging. How many of you are social huggers? Yeah, you know you are. Yeah, yeah. Jesus doesn't seem to be down with it here. He's like, "Hey, let's chill out. Let's do the shake hand things." I don't know. No, I don't think this is about hugging, because this is, of course, John the artist. I think what's going on here is this. It's about the human condition. Our propensity as humans to try to hold on to what once was. I think what Mary wants, it seems, is for things to go back to the way that things always were. She sees Jesus and sort of thinks, "Ah, perfect. You're back. We can carry on as usual. We can sort of get the band back together." This summer, my neighbor said to me, "Hey, Rage Against the Machine is getting back together and touring. Do you want to go?" And I'm like, "Yes." Like 90s Rage Against the Machine. That was awesome. So they had formed this super group, Prophets of Rage. I love their little slogan, "Make America Rage Again." So we all got into it, and I went with people that I didn't know very well, which is something very odd for me. Went down with a bunch of people I don't know. There's a bunch of dads in a minivan, yeah, driving to a Prophets of Rage concert. And it's funny, we're waiting for the music to begin, and we're talking about, "So what kind of minivan are you interested in?" "Oh, interesting. Well, okay, the music's about to begin. We better get angry." It was the weirdest moment. I was like all in this dad talk, and then all of a sudden it's like time to get angry. And the whole time I was there, and there's these grown men, like 40s, who remember their youth, and they're, and I'm like, "What is going on?" I felt like, this just feels so wrong on so many levels. I'm just not that angry anymore. And it was the most bizarre thing for me, because it was like I was trying to recreate my youth. It's trying to be in that moment. And have you ever tried to recreate a season and gone, "Oh, this is just not healthy," right? You know, this is what's going on, I think, with Mary. She's like, "Great, things can return to how they were." What Jesus is teaching us here, though, is that a season has ended, and now a new one's beginning. And so I think the story is about human nature. We want things to go back to the way they were. A time when it was safe. A time when it was comfortable. Our propensity, I think, is this, is to always cling to the old, the familiar, what is comfortable, what we know, what is. But I don't think we can do that and hope to remain healthy. And so to seize the season in front of us, it means letting go of how it was so that you can be open to what is. Sometimes that means not clinging to the past, trying to hold on to what was. One of my New Year's resolutions has been to try to go to bed at 10:30 p.m. every night. I've had mixed results so far, including last night. But I've been trying to go to bed earlier because I'm a night hawk. I'm a night owl. I'll go to bed late. But I kind of think of nights. I was reading this book one time. I can't remember what the name was. But it had this brilliant line in it. It was talking about kids and why they have trouble going to sleep at night. And the line from the book said this: kids have trouble going to sleep at night because they find it impossible to believe that there is no more time for fun. And when I read that line, I almost fell off my chair because I'm like, that's me. Like every night, it's nighttime, it's Brad time. I'm like, this is me time, and there's so much time for fun. TV shows, reading, movies. I'm always staying up so late. I'm like, going to bed to me every night seems like defeat. It just feels like, I guess we've given up on fun for the day. I'm going to bed. It always feels like I'm surrendering to something. But what I've come to realize is this, is my life is perfectly calibrated to a season of life that is now finished for me. But I stubbornly cling to it. Staying up late, 1, 2 in the morning, it works when you're 20 or when you're in the music industry. But not when you have kids. Because my kids wake me up every morning. They come in, daddy, daddy, wake up. And I'm like awful. Go away. I don't like you. Go away. I'm like, oh. Like I'm in the worst mood when I wake up. Staying up every night that late, I'm living into a season that's past for me. And so I'm trying to live into the season that's before me, and it's torturous. I know for some of you, like, 10:30, good night, I would have been in bed 2 hours ago. Yeah. Well, that's late. For me, it's like, this is so difficult. But what I'm finding is this, it's always difficult when you stop clinging to a season that was before and try to live into the season that's right before you. This is just the way of it. New seasons of life, they ask for different things from us. They challenge us in different ways. They demand certain things from us. If we're clinging to the past, the season of life that has ended, we often miss the unique opportunities and seasons that are in front of us right now. And so it's one thing to recognize when a new season of life is upon us, what that asks of us. But oftentimes we miss two things that need to happen before we can enter a new season of life. And we'll call these liminal space and grief. Let me expand on those two with a story from Scripture that it wrecks me every time I read it. It's Paul's farewell to his friends in Ephesus. And he's been traveling around doing missionary work, and he's about to see his friends in Ephesus for the last time. This is how it plays out. From Miletus, Paul sent to Ephesus for the elders of the church. When they arrived, he said to them, "You know how I lived the whole time I was with you. From the first day I came into the province of Asia, I served the Lord with great humility and with tears in the midst of severe testing. And now, compelled by the Spirit, I'm going to Jerusalem, not knowing what will happen to me there. Now I know that none of you among whom I have gone about preaching the kingdom will ever see me again. So be on your guard. Remember that for 3 years I never stopped warning each of you, night and day, and with tears. Now I commit you to God and to the word of his grace, which can build you up and give you an inheritance among all those who are sanctified." When Paul had finished speaking, he knelt down with all of them and prayed, and they all wept as they embraced him and kissed him. What grieved them most was his statement that they would never see his face again. And then they accompanied him to the ship. I find this scene emotional. It's a scene of Scripture that kind of wrecks me because outside of death in our day and age, the thought of never seeing or speaking to someone again has almost become foreign to us because somebody can move far away, but we can still connect with them, social media, email. But for Paul and his friends here, this is it. It's a goodbye, a final goodbye. And Paul had spent like a decade in Asia, but he had spent 3 intense years with this group of people, working with them, pouring himself into them. Some incredibly deep relationships had formed, but he senses a new chapter of life emerging, his final season of life, and so he's leaving one period of time behind because a new period is coming. And 2 things really jump out at me about this scene. The first is liminal space. What I so treasure about this scene here is that for Paul, while one season is ending for him, the next one is still a bit mysterious. It hasn't quite started. Working with the church and others in Asia, that's been his life call. Like, this is like if he had a life mission statement, this is it. But now that's ending, and he feels called to return home. Something new. And yet, while he feels compelled to return home, he has no idea what that looks like. Notice what he says. Now, compelled by the Spirit, I'm going to Jerusalem, not knowing what will happen to me there. One season comes to an end. He knows there's another in front of him, but doesn't know what that's going to look like. This is what we call liminal space, a period of time between seasons. A period of time when you're not in that thing that was before, but you're not quite in the thing that's to come either, the in-between. In my own experience, I have found liminal space to have some of the most interesting and important lessons to teach us. And so you know in life that there's a next thing coming, but you find yourself waiting. You find yourself trying to figure out, what does this next season look like? What does it look like and how does it play out? And sometimes it can be painful because you try certain things, but that doesn't feel right. And so it can be time of real tension. None of us like that tension. We don't like to wait. We don't like uncertainty. It's uncomfortable. So we want to rush through liminal space, get to that next thing, and yet these seasons between seasons have so much to teach us. Paul didn't know what was ahead. He just knew he had to go. He had to head in a certain direction. And I think it's probably the same for some of us this morning. We don't know what a new season might mean for us, but maybe even now this morning, you know what I'm talking about. There's something there that you need to pursue. You sense this season, this thing, this time with this work or this identity, this task, whatever it is you're doing is coming to the end and something is about to reveal itself, but you're not quite sure what. And what we have to learn is to be okay there. We miss what these liminal moments can teach us if we don't sort of actively sit and listen and be present with God in these moments. It doesn't work if we fill our lives with constant distractions. As it was for Paul, I suspect it is for some of you this morning. New seasons of life usually bring us into liminal space before what is new is revealed. And that's okay. But what moves me most about this scene with Paul and his friends is the tangible sense of grief. Weeping. Embraces, saying goodbye the last time. Paul moves into this new season and he leaves the old season behind in grief, which is always the way. I think it's the healthy way. For us, whenever we end a season of life, it will involve some kind of grief. And I think one of the reasons we so often live under the umbrella of nostalgia, unable to be present to what is in front of us, is that the season before us is we were never given the time or took the time to grieve what was ending. I remember 2 nights before Zoe was born, and Zoe was overdue, so Kristen and I decided to go for a very long walk, try to speed up the process, you could say. And we were walking, and I will never forget that night because it almost turned into a bit of a goodbye. Not in the sense of, I'll never see you again, obviously we're still here, but a sort of, the world, the season, the moment of it just being you and I is about to end. We'll never just be Brad and Kristen again. Whole life's about to change. We'll never be like, hey, you want to hop on a plane, on a whim, and go here. We'll always have something else to consider. And so it turned into this 3-hour walk of sort of recalling memories from the 7 years we've been married and just sort of saying, that was so wonderful. But goodbye to that. Or I remember when I was graduating from college, I had a prof who always was way too I was doing things way too spiritual. It was cracked me up. But I remember one ritual he did right as we were about to graduate, and we were in a class together, and it was the last class of the semester. And I'll never forget it. He said, I want you all to stand up, which he did. He's like, I want you all to hold hands in a circle. I'm like, oh, geez. But I went along with it. He held hands, and he's like, for the past 3 years, you have been tracking with one another. You've been in a season of life where you've been shaping each other's lives. But he said, I want you to look around the room right now because this is the last time this specific group of people will ever be in the same room again. Whoa. So suddenly the intensity of the moment going, wow, for 3 years we've been tracking together and now everybody's going their own way. And there was this tangible sense of excitement for what was to come. And yet this was beautiful. And yet, it's sad to say goodbye to some people. And you know, I think the reality is this change is always a form of loss. We can never go back to the way things were. And so new seasons are terrifying. We don't know what to expect because we've never been to this new place before. We can end up trying to recreate old seasons of life. And so when we leave a season of time, when the time is right to move on to the next thing, I think we need to grieve. And the worst part is this, we have so few rituals for helping us move in and out of seasons. I think we're so much poorer for it. If you sense yourself on the cusp of a new season, about to leave something behind, take the time to grieve it. It doesn't matter how big or small it is. If it's a big deal to you, then it's a big deal. Once heard Rob Bell remark that emotions are our body's way of telling the truth. Change of any kind is hard. If change makes you sad, that's your body telling you there's something to grieve. We see that played out in this scene here with Paul. Paul knows there's something new ahead for him, but he doesn't just be like, oh, okay, I'm off to Jerusalem. He's like, no, I need to stop. I need to weep on a dock with some people. I need to say goodbye. And to properly move forward into what this moment of time has for us, it sometimes means grieving what we're leaving behind. In life, timing is everything. Understanding what time is for us is critical. Understanding what season of life we find ourselves in and what that means for us is so important if we're ever going to grow and mature. And so at the dawn of a new year, what is this particular season of time asking of you? What is it calling you to? I think the words of the wisdom tradition are appropriate here in Ecclesiastes. There's a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. Because I know the Nexus crowd well enough, yes, there are some hermeneutical issues to be resolved in this passage. I don't know what you do with a time to hate and kill in light of the Sermon on the Mount, but I think you move it into the spiritual realm. You move it into metaphor. But for this morning, don't let that distract you. There's a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. Timing is everything, and there is a time for everything. So what time is it for you? What time is it? Are you trying to cling to something from the past you need to let go? A relationship. Maybe you still think about him or her. Maybe it's that job you had and the identity that came with it, and it's time to let that go. Or maybe you catch yourself living or daydreaming nostalgically about the good old days, whatever that means or whatever that was. If you're like me, maybe it's that article of clothing in your closet that you can't fit into, but you keep thinking, someday I'll get back there. Maybe it's time to clean out the closet, let it go. Maybe it's some sort of career dream. I'm so close. Whatever it is there something you need to let go of so you can properly enter a new season of life, what the specific period of time is asking of you? For some of you, are you in liminal space? For some of you, that may be immediate. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Others, maybe it's just like, I don't know what's next. Maybe you sense a shift in life, but you have no idea where that's heading, what that looks like or means. I would say this, just trust the process. Be okay with uncertainty. Be okay with being in the tension. Enter into liminal space courageously. Liminal space, it has its own work to do on each of us. So even if you leave here this morning going, I don't know what time it is for me, rest in the knowledge that's okay. There's a purpose for that too, and there is a season for not being in a season as well. Do you need a period of grieving? For some of us to move into a new season of life, maybe what you need is a time, a period, a moment of grieving. Maybe what you need is to name out loud what it is you're leaving behind. Maybe like Paul, what you need to do is sort of symbolically stand on a dock and name the season of life that is no more for you. We have so few rituals for grieving this. We're poor for it. So I'm going to try to create one for us. I'm into chopping wood and having fires. So this Wednesday night, I'm going to make a campfire in my backyard. I'm building the fire. And I want to invite you to my house from 8 to 10 p.m. because I got to be in bed by 10:30. From 8 to 10, why don't you come on over and I'll have a fire there. And if you're in that place where you're like, I need to grieve something, I need to let it go, why don't you write it down or bring something symbolically that represents the season of life you're leaving? And why don't you come on over and we'll have you name that. And then you can let that go in the fire. And we'll just sit in the freezing cold and have a little ritual where we let go of something. Sound good? Wednesday night. Oh, Jesus. Let's go Thursday night. Thursday night. Thursday. Yeah. Oh, that was low. Sure, of course she can make the fire. I have no problem with that. Maybe a little. But come on over. We'll sit. Let's do Thursday. Thursday. We're going to do Thursday. I hope I don't have anything on Thursday night. You're good. So let's do that. And if it's just Kristen and I, we'll have a lovely time. Maybe the neighbors will come over. It'll be great. Finally, is a new season. Let me ask the band to come. Oh, my goodness. I missed my cue. Sorry. So play that song out for us. Is a new season waiting for you to enter into it? Because what I suspect for many of us is that there is something right in front of you. I suspect there's something calling out to your conscience, your soul, asking for you to attend to it and bring your whole self to it. Because I believe God's Spirit is always calling us forward to what's next. And so for many of us, the time to enter that is right now, at the beginning of a year. And so may you have the courage to enter into a new season with your whole being. And may you enter this new season with hope and expectation, because timing in life is everything. So what time is it for you?